Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have Sheriff Mark Kreider, retired FBI, current sheriff of Walla Walla County, Washington State. Thanks for being on the show, Sheriff. Also, to keep him straight, we've got Chief Chris Noller from Pueblo Police Department of Colorado. And to keep these two guys straight, we've got two Secret Service guys. We've got Rich Sterapoli, and we've also got Frank Loveridge. So thank you, gentlemen, for being on the show. We appreciate it. And hey, a big shout out to our sponsors. Guys, please support our sponsors. They go the great lengths to make the show available to you. Our title sponsor is Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And thanks to them, we've been on satellite radio since Cinco de Mayo, May the 5th, and it's been a great ride so far. GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to Safeguard Recruiting, we're streaming to about 1.5 million people right now. And also TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. You get cool gear like the shirt that I'm wearing. And look, the prices are low. Go to LeoRoundtable.com. Check out the online store built by TwoBells. You'll love the gear. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? Guys, we got a good first topic. Task Force drops a bombshell report on attempted assassination of President Donald Trump. Wait till you hear what they have to say. We've also got a Good Samaritan helping a Georgia police officer arrest an armed person. They're fighting over a gun, the three of them. We got Dallas police releasing a 911 call and body cam footage of an officer fatally shooting a knife-wielding man. And then we got Kern County Sheriff deputy shooting a guy wielding a rifle. He's on top of a roof. The deputy's got a pistol, takes out the dude with the rifle. And it's at night. It's at nighttime. Unbelievable shot. Then we got LA sheriff's deputies missing an assault rifle. Dude, there's no such thing as assault rifles in law enforcement. I can't even believe KTLA wrote this thing. But anyhow, LA sheriff's deputies missing long gun and ammo ends up being returned to the department by an honest citizen. Then we had Colorado Springs. They released a video of a fatal shooting of an apartment complex of an armed suspect. And if we have time to get to it, Orlando police released body cam video of an arrest that went viral. And so without wasting any more time, guys, let's jump right into it. RVMnews.com, which stands for Red Voice Media Task Force, drops a bombshell report on attempted assassination of Donald Trump. If you guys can believe it, it's been about a year. That was on July the 13th of last year. So a new report released by the U.S. Government Accountability Office, that's GOA, they have revealed multiple failures by the U.S. Secret Service in the days that led up to the July 13, 2024 attempted assassination of President Donald Trump, that campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. Now, look, the fact that someone dropped the ball is not news, right? I mean, every American citizen that's got a decent IQ was aware of that when we saw it, right? I mean, I was in the car listening to what went down and heard the shots, you know, being fired, and I knew something had gone wrong. But this GAO investigation, it was requested by the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, and he found that the Secret Service had received classified intelligence regarding this potential threat on the president's life 10 days before the rally. The problem is that they never communicated to law enforcement or to Trump's protective detail. And, you know, look, we're gonna have guys talking that know a lot more about this than me. I'm just reading and looking and relaying the information from this report. But Grassley said that 1 year ago, a series of bad decisions and bureaucratic handicaps led to one of the most shocking moments in political history. He goes on to say that the Secret Service's failure on July 13th was the culmination of years of mismanagement, and it came after the Biden administration denied requests for enhanced security to protect President Trump. That's just mind-blowing, is it not? And it continues. Americans should be grateful that President Trump survived that day and was ultimately reelected to restore common sense to our country. The GOA, the agency that released this report and did the investigation, that report outlined a range of shortcomings, including misallocation of resources, lack of training, and pervasive communication failures. And according to the report, local law enforcement, they told investigators that they would have deployed additional personnel if they had been made aware of the threat. The report also confirms that the Secret Service denied the Trump campaign direct request, and because they were requesting, and we heard about it, for enhanced security for the Butler event, despite the presence of a credible threat. Goes on to say the most striking detail in the report involves the lack of experience among the agents that were actually assigned to assess vulnerabilities at the rally site. And according to the report, the Secret Service agent that was tasked with evaluating the location, he was new to the role. He had never previously taken part in planning a protective operation for a presidential event. Additionally, the report stated that Trump nearly did not have access to the counter sniper assets that ultimately took out the shooter. And it goes on to say the Secret Service had denied the Donald Trump Protective Division's request for advanced counter unmanned aerial surveillance equipment and sniper teams, citing that these resources they'd already been allocated to the Republican and the Democratic National Conventions. And the GAO noted that it was only due to the intervention by senior officials who were actually aware of that specific threat intelligence that the counter sniper resources were ultimately deployed to Butler. It goes on with some other stuff. It talks about disciplinary issues. I'll let you guys talk about that and about the questions that it raises. Are there still people embedded in the Secret Service that were part of the problem that have not been removed? And I'm talking about the guys where discipline would not have been enough, the guys that we needed to get out of there. So whoever wants to go first, I'm hoping to hear from Rich Astiropoli or Frank Loveridge first. Frank, why don't you go and start us off, buddy?
Well, this was obviously, Chip, a catastrophic operational failure. There's no way around it. And you had a site agent, an advance agent that was not properly trained. And we can see that's pretty evident. I spent 9 years on the president's detail. I did multiple advances, leads. I actually was in charge of instruction on the president's detail, where I was in charge of teaching the agents how to do these advances. I've never seen anything like this in my life. SATC students, which is our basic trainees, could have probably done a better job without any guidance whatsoever. There were so many things missed. But Chip, I'll start off by just saying what went wrong. The first thing was the failure to design that site properly. We all saw the AGR building. We saw those warehouses out there. Those should have been enveloped within the perimeter. Had they done that, you wouldn't have had easy access to those buildings. So there's your first problem. They used the fence as the border. They should have enveloped those in. You had the line of sight was terrible. You had the ability to look from outside the magged area at the stage and see the president of the United States, former president, on that stage. That is within rifle range. That is a no-no. That is a 101 mistake right there. It should never have happened. And we should have lined up vehicles to block that line of sight and to absorb a potential improvised explosive device. And then the advance agent. And Rich will tell you this. You had a site agent. You had a lead advance agent. Then you had a walkthrough that was conducted by a supervisor from the local field office, and you had another walkthrough by the Trump detail. How, with all of those walkthroughs, could you not figure out that nobody was on top of that AGR roof? Unbelievable. And then the communication issues with two command posts, not communicating with each other. And then, you know, you brought it up, Chip, the denied protective assets. They were denied 12 times protective assets. They asked for the assets. They got one sniper team. That's all they got to address the threat that the detail leader didn't even know existed. And thank God they did, because that sniper team neutralized that threat after 8 rounds. But I will tell you, if they had CSU and other teams there, this would never have happened, and multiple CS teams. But that never came because they denied those assets to the president. And if I was the detail leader, I would be so livid that I was not aware 10 days out there was an Iranian threat, a nation state, against my protectee, and I didn't know about it. And then lastly, training, complete mess. It was unbelievable to think that they would get out there with the complacency that they had and the lack of implementing the proper procedures and methodology. This whole thing fell apart. I've never seen anything like it. And yes, people need to be held accountable. Take it away, Richie.
Well, listen, Frank, I still don't think it was an issue with training, right? I think it's an issue with execution. Right? Because you and I were trained. We didn't have any problems. And we've done some of the biggest sites any modern day president has ever gone to. But look at the performance of some of those people that was clearly on display on live television carried worldwide. Right? That kind of speaks for itself. That purely speaks to the hiring practices that have permeated the Secret Service, as well as federal law enforcement in the last decade, certainly during the Biden years. Right? You got what you wanted. You wanted optics? You got it. But when something happened, nobody rose to the occasion and could handle the problem. Right, the very first paragraph of that GAO report, which is actually pretty detailed and pretty thorough, but the very first paragraph should say the leadership of the Secret Service, to include the former director and former deputy director, and we all saw those performances before Congress, right? Talk about empty suits. If anybody's looking to buy empty suits, Go to the Secret Service headquarters. You can have an empty suit sale with the leadership of the Secret Service that's there and still in place. But you got the director and the deputy director, neither of whom would take any responsibility, claiming it was an agency failure. No, it wasn't an agency failure because you two were the agency. It was you two who tried to treat President Trump simply as the former president, akin to the level of protection given to Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, or even former President Bush. You disregarded the level of threat, the size of the crowds that Trump was drawing. And keep in mind, this was 1 month after that disastrous debate where everyone knew Trump, former President Trump, was going to be the nominee for the Republican Party. This thing was a mess from the outset. People need to go to prison. They are directly responsible for not only getting the president shot, but for getting somebody killed and two other people shot. If these were cops and they inadvertently pulled out their taser, pulled out their handgun thinking it was their taser, and they killed someone accidentally, they'd immediately be removed of their gun and badge and prosecuted. Cops have gone to jail for killing people, yet no one at the Secret Service is being criminally held or even civilly held liable for such a egregious dereliction of duty. And I'll stop right there, Chip, because I could go on for 2 hours.
I know we can. Wow. Rich, we're going to commercial. Okay, there you go.
Oh, we're coming up. I'll tell you, my blood pressure is already up now, thanks to you two guys. Excellent information, guys. Look, we're not done talking about this. There's some questions that I have that the American people need answered. We will be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know that we can get our gear from a lot of different places. And then when you throw the online equation into it, the choices are almost like endless, right? But I want to remind everybody here about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. And even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens, and I mean dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please go no further than looking at our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. They pretty much have everything but guns and ammo too. And they have gift cards. If you have family, friends, and loved ones, hook them up with a new Gauls gift card. They will be your new best friend. So again, that website, it's Gauls.com. Back in the day, they used to send these huge catalogs to the mail. They've got so much gear now, they couldn't even fit it in one catalog. They've started some catalogs, but hey, go to Gauls.com to get everything. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. I'm Chip the Block, your host. Man, we've got a topic for you. We're talking about the Secret Service debacle that happened a year ago at Butler, Pennsylvania, the attempted assassination of our current president, Donald Trump. And we just had Frank Loveridge and Rich Terapoli from the Secret Service talking. We've also got Sheriff Mark Kreider and Chief Chris Noller on the show as well. I'd like to discuss, look, fixing the problem. We've identified, and the report did a decent job, I think, at identifying the problems. Of course, they've had a year to do it, right? But if there's people in this country that are concerned about the Secret Service as far as, did we remove people that should have been removed? I haven't heard of anyone being charged criminally, which I know that Rich was talking about a second ago, but have we removed these people? And specifically, you know, we had two heads of the Secret Service during this time. There was one replaced and put in charge. And then we had the, in my mind, and watching the reruns of this thing, I saw female agents, and I'm not pointing them out because they were female, but it was just so clearly they were in a position that they simply could not perform in. And so you immediately start thinking about things like DEI hires and stuff like that. So where are we at as far as disciplining, getting rid of, firing, or maybe even criminally charging people, or are they just shuffling people around the different positions and letting them, you know, collect their paycheck? And are they still a threat to our security here, you know, homeland? Frank.
So I want to start off by saying that the Secret Service has a zero fail mission. We cannot fail. Zero fail. But then you have six individuals that are identified as part of that and actually failed. So therefore, how do you explain the fact that we have a zero fail mission and you have six individuals that failed, that we don't hold them accountable?
Now, they had a bad day, Frank.
They had a bad day. That's right. And they got 10 good days on vacation without pay, maybe, but they still were on vacation from 10 to 42 days. So what I would say is by putting them back in non-operational roles or in reduced roles, what does that do for you? And what message does that send to the other agents? You have a zero fail mission, and these people have literally nearly caused the death of a former president of the United States because of their mistakes that they made. So we got 22 components in DHS. Some of these areas don't have quite the mission that we have, and therefore they could be transferred to another agency if that's what you want to do. But putting them back in the Secret Service, not a good idea. It doesn't send the right message. Now, I will tell you, the director and the assistant director or deputy director were both resigned, and we had other directors or assistant directors, I should say, that were allowed to retire. So we did clean house quite a bit up there on that eighth floor, which is our C-suite. But there's a lot more to go, and we know that. We know, Richie and I know these people out there, and we know that there are people out there that made bad decisions those days. We're part of that, that are still on the job. We need to take a deep dive on this and make sure we extract those people, get them out of that position, bring on good people. And, we talked about this earlier. It comes down to hiring. That is the most important part. The people are the most important part of that organization. We got to make sure we're hiring the right people, recruiting in the right places, and holding them accountable. Go ahead, Rich.
You know what, Frank? I would have taken those six people, and I'm not just highlighting the women here. I'll get to that in a second. But those six people needed to be fired immediately. If nothing else, I would have shipped them over to customs at JFK Airport, let them stamp passports. They should not be carrying guns. It's ridiculous. You saw what happened on TV, right? This isn't Karine Jean-Pierre where I'm saying the sky is purple and everybody sees it's blue. You saw what happened there, right? You had a deputy director, the new deputy director, who came on and said, "Fire! We're not going to fire our way out of this." Really? Hey, dummy, you just told the whole world that the elite Secret Service is no different than any other agency. The public's perception of federal agencies to begin with is that there's zero accountability. Well, you just told them they're right. We're not going to hold these people accountable. They're directly responsible for a guy getting killed on live TV in front of his family, let alone the president getting shot. We really don't even know if that guy got 8 shots off, 10 shots, 20 shots. Who the hell knows what happened here? Because no investigation was done. But at the very least, these people should have been fired. You don't just put them back in the field. This isn't the New York City Police Department where I got 50,000 cops and I can bury them in the property room somewhere. What are we supposed to do with these people? This is the problem from the get-go. But Chip, again, on this one topic alone, people are hitting me up about, why do you keep talking about the women? Okay, let me talk about the counter sniper. This genius is on the roof of the building and says he saw the guy laying on the roof of the building. It's in the report. He didn't think he needed to call anyone because, somebody else will do it. That's an exact quote. That tells you where this guy's head's at. We're going to put this guy back in the rank and file with the rifle and the green light to shoot somebody and kill him? This guy couldn't even make a decision to call somebody to tell him there's a guy on the roof of a building. You can't be there. You cannot be associated with the Secret Service. You got to go.
Wow.
Chip, I just want to say one thing. The hiring practices changed quite a bit from when Richie and I came on this job. And we need to go back to those standards. We need to make sure that we're recruiting the right people with the backgrounds and the experience, the fortitude, and I'm going to say it, the mental and physical toughness that we had on this job. And I'm telling you, that's been lost, and we need to get it back, and we need to install it and hold people accountable. That is the bottom line. It's all about the people.
And it's one thing to hear from us, Chip, but you got two sheriffs that didn't have any connection to the Secret Service. They'll tell you the same thing we're telling you. It's so obvious and apparent, and these guys are leading organizations. Certainly this would not have played out in either of these police at these sheriff's departments that these two guys are with.
Yeah. And we were, I see a correlation. Before the show started, we were talking about retention rates, and even Sheriff Mark Kreider was talking about where they were at with the FBI, which is where he was formerly with before he came sheriff. So Sheriff Kreider.
I'll weigh in. Even though I wasn't Secret Service, the FBI did have a protective mission with the Attorney General and the director. So I have some knowledge of how this stuff works. Number one, communications is always key. And if you don't have the assets, you reach out to your local partners to do this. I think there's twofold problem here. Number one, DHS is a bulky, overblown, and it needs to go away. Homeland Security needs to go away. Number two, you have to have accountability. You have to fire people when they make mistakes. And for whatever reason, the government cannot fire people out of government service.
All right, excellent. Guys, stick with us. Our second commercial break, we'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions that help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which is conductive distraction and de-escalation technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. It said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminate weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them the Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up next week, they've got, and that's July the 23rd, Miranda and Beyond. Don't miss that. Sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. We're joined by, and hey, this is all Secret Service right now, Rich Steripoli and Frank Loveridge from the Secret Service. We also have Sheriff Mark Kreider, and we have Chief Chris Nolan on the show. We've been talking about the report that just came out, pretty critical of the Secret Service and their performance at Butler, Pennsylvania, a year ago with the attempted assassination of our current president, Donald Trump. And we've had a lot of guys weighing. Actually, there's so much to talk about that during the commercial break, the conversation's been going as well. What I would like to cover before we move on to the next topic, because we've already, half the show has already come and gone, but I would like to hear a prediction from Rich or Frank on whether this report is going to create an urgency or exigency in doing something more disciplinary for those involved, whether it's firing, prosecuting, or anything like that. Is this report going to make any changes? Is there going to be any further fruits coming from the investigation other than what we've seen so far? Rich?
I don't think so, right? The deputy director came out and made that statement. And you think about it, why was the deputy director? Something monumental like this? Where the hell's the director? Why doesn't he come out and say this? He just spent, $10 million building this fancy press room at Secret Service headquarters, and the guy doesn't even see the need to use this thing. So I find that incredible. But, more importantly, the legal counsel at the Secret Service has always had a history of being inept, right? They have very little real litigation experience, very little judicial experience other than having passed the bar exam. They have this position called agent attorneys, which are junior agents that they make an attorney at the Secret Service, yet they haven't been in court, right? These people are the equivalent of the Jasmine Crockett's of the federal law enforcement world, right? They're completely useless. And if you're depending on those people to make a decision to fire someone, it's just not going to happen.
But I have it on good authority. She's considering taking an IQ test coming up. So I've just
heard IQ. I would have no idea what it means.
Spell IQ. Chip, I'll just say one thing. I think the biggest thing we need to be concerned right now is the threats to President Trump, because they're everywhere. You've got these individuals, the Ryan Roots, the James Crooks out there, John Matthew Crook, who's out there. And you also have the Iranian threat. Don't forget a $40 million fatwa that was put out by the supreme leader of Iran to execute a jihad and to kill President Trump. We know that 1,500 Iranian nationals were arrested on our border from 2021 to 2024, trying to get in our country. Of that, there were 729 of them that were released into the United States. The Biden administration won't tell us, even with FOIA requests, anything about these people. But we know that since June 18th, ICE has arrested 130 Iranian nationals that have ties to foreign national terrorist organizations. Some of them do. They also arrested a former Iranian army sniper. So look, the threat is inside our border now. We have to be cognizant of that. Law enforcement, this whole team here, everyone out there has to be aware of that, because it's real. And this is the biggest concern of all. If we don't start shaping up, Richie and Chip and everyone on this call, we are going to have a problem if we can't do a better job of protecting our president.
Agreed. Agreed. Final word, Sheriff.
So Frank hit a couple of hot buttons for me. First of all, I don't know much about the GAO, but I'll tell you, in the FBI, during my whistleblower stuff, the DOJ IG, the Inspector General's office, weighed in. They have zero teeth, and quite frankly, they have zero cojones either. So they came through, they did their investigation, they came out, they wouldn't say that the SAC lied, but they would say that she wasn't credible. But they don't have punitive power, so they hand it back to the same agency that had the issue to do the punitive portion of the findings, and they sat on it and let her retire instead of punishing her. So until you put some teeth into that, you're not going to get anywhere. And I can tell you, the FOIA process is a joke. I've had a FOIA into the FBI since 2017. I've yet to receive one page of my FOIA request. So don't get me started on how government accountability. As a sheriff, if I don't respond within 30 days, I go to jail for a FOIA request. And I'm going on 8 years for my FOIA request that I know that I could walk into an FBI agent, FBI office tomorrow and download it in less than 15 minutes.
Well, all right, guys. Well, look, excellent contact, excellent commentary. And thank you guys so much. I know that Rich and Frank have been doing the circuit this week and talking about this on networks, and thank you guys so much. But I don't think that you guys have appeared together as far as I know. So I love the fact that you guys are both here together talking about this and feeding off of each other. I love, there's the energy here. It's incredible. So thank you guys. Thank you guys so much. So, yeah, Rich,
there's no way a network is going to let Frank and I appear on TV.
There's no way. It's not going to happen, Chip. It would take over. The anchor wouldn't even be there. It'd just be the two of us.
And Chip, to draw this back into the whole reason that you have this podcast in the first place, I think if you watch Frank and Rich talk about this, and maybe me a little bit, but the passion with which we discuss this, as we've always said, the people that hate bad cops the worst are good cops. Yeah. And so we are very passionate about having a professional organization, whether it be a police chief, a sheriff, a Secret Service agent, an FBI agent. We want our organization to be held to a higher standard. Every good professional wants that. I'm sure you were the same way when you were a cop. You want your organization to be the absolute best.
You're absolutely right.
Picking right up on that, Sheriff Mark, you know, if you talk to Chief Noller, right, I'm sure nobody's more incensed by the lack of communication put forward by that counter sniper that day than you are, right? You were a sniper. And right. And there's, you know, so it's not, you're not just hearing it from Frank and I. He's an actual sniper. He'll tell you that guy screwed up and should be fired.
Yes, that's the first job of a sniper, is to observe and report what they see. They're the eyes and ears of what's happening. At least that's the way I was trained. And to see a guy on a roof when a former president is giving a speech, whether he's running for office or not, and not say anything, is the most asinine thing I've ever heard of. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, excellent, guys. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. If anything comes down the pike further on this, you can rest assured that we will be covered on the show, and we'll have Rich and Frank back as well. So, in fact, the whole crew. So thank you, guys. Hey, moving along, I'll tell you what, I'm going to skip over the update stories and jump straight into a story with a video component. You know, a lot of our listeners, they love the when we talk about these stories with video components. And let me just say that before I talk about this first one, if you're listening to the show audibly, your favorite podcast or radio station, please stay loyal to that entity that's bringing you this content. And in exchange for that, we'll describe in great detail what's going on with any video components so that you don't feel like you're being left out. But if there's a video that we cover that you absolutely have to see, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel the very next day, because Tuesday through Saturday at 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, our producer, Will Statcher, he takes a copy of the live show from the day before. He'll embed every video that we talk about as we talk about it. He'll put pictures of the good guys and the bad guys that pop up as we talk about them. It's really a great way to watch the show. And again, that is at 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, Tuesday through Saturday. So on this first story with the video component at rumble.com and our favorite law enforcement video channel where we get all of our videos from, it's called This Is Butter. Dallas police, they released a 911 call and body cam footage of an officer that fatally shoots a knife-wielding man.
The knife! Drop the knife! Drop the knife! Drop the knife! Drop the fucking knife! Drop the 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 knife!
Drop the knife!
Drop the knife!
Shots fired. Drop 315, shots fired.
Drop the knife! Drop the knife!
Put the knife down.
So we're in Dallas, Texas, and we've got police respond to a call about a guy. He's our bad guy, later identified as Jake Miller. So he's only got two names. So the first flag is already he's not that bad of a guy because he doesn't have three names, right? That's what I'm thinking. So Jake Miller, 37 years old. He's on the street and he's armed with a knife. But and this is before 10 o'clock in the morning on July the 9th. So the department had received several 911 calls about this guy acting erratically. He's cutting himself with knives. And we had a caller saying that Miller tried to kick in the door of a home. Another person alleged that he came toward her with a knife and that she locked herself inside her car. So officers reported when they get there that Miller is actually carrying two knives. And the first responding officer on scene, he actually hits Miller with a pepper ball gun. So again, it's a potential lethal situation, but they're using less lethal, which is not necessarily an issue. And they're using a long gun to deliver the pepper ball so they can do that from a distance. So officers get out of their cars. They order Miller to stop and then drop his knives. He, of course, refuses to comply. And then they hit him with the pepper balls again. So the pepper ball guy was getting some good free training on the job there. Miller allegedly kept walking, though, towards the officers as they retreated. And then officers, they tried to stun him with a taser. And he continues advancing. And so the article says that you can hear officers giving multiple commands to drop the knife in the body cam. And Miller allegedly starts charging. And one of the officers identified as Officer Anthony Pargas. And he ends up firing four shots from his handgun and he hits our bad guy. Miller could be seen running towards the officer in the body cam before the shots end up being fired. He falls to the ground. He's still holding one of the knives. Officers are able to kick one of the knives away from him. And they do emergency medical treatment. But they transport him to the hospital and he ends up dying and they recover two knives at the scene. So that's the way this thing ends. And guys, we're coming up on our commercial break though. So look, stick with us. We will go through this as soon as we get back from commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course itself has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder is Daniel Kelly, and he's got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, GunLearn.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Sheriff Mark Kreider, Chief Chris Knoller, and from the Secret Service, we've got Frank Loveridge and Chris, and Rich. I almost gave you a new name, Rich. And Rich Steripoli. Hey, we just got done talking about, and we haven't had review of it yet and commentary, but I just got done talking about a story. Dallas police released a 911 call. There's body cam footage of this. So the officer fatally shoots a knife-wielding man that charges the officer after they gave him a bunch of choices, a bunch of commands, and a lot of less lethal. So this is Dallas PD. I'm curious what you guys think about this. So whoever wants to weigh in first, but a use of lethal force, the bad guy did end up dying on this one. And Sheriff Mark Kreider.
Yeah, I think a couple of things with this video that it goes to the way that we're training our officers this day and age, in especially in Washington. We talk about time, distance, and cover. Well, time, distance, and cover are fine until the rubber meets the road and somebody's got a gun or a knife or some other weapon, and you don't have to retreat forever. And I think if you watch the way that this guy's retreating once he gets his gun out, he's creating crossfire situations. There were a number of times when I thought he should have pulled the trigger and I could see another officer in the line of, you know, line of sight. I don't know how good his firearm skills are, but I would prefer not to have that issue. We're not creating that triangle and keeping, you know, keeping our shape, so to speak, and we put our fellow officers in jeopardy. So I love the fact you got multiple officers there, so you have the ability to use less lethal. Less lethal is not always effective, and at some point he's made the decision that he's coming after you with that weapon, and you have a right to defend yourself, and lethal force is authorized, and lethal mm-hmm. force in this case was authorized probably a lot earlier.
Mm. Yeah, I agree 100% with the sheriff, and it goes back to something I've said on this podcast a number of times. De-escalation is not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. And in order for something to be de-escalated, the person you're trying to de-escalate has to cooperate. This in particular shows the difficulty with open air scenarios where you have people moving, you can't keep them stationary. You end up, with issues related to crossfires, the sheriff brought up, moving around, trying to, create distance when sometimes that's not necessarily what you should do. I mean, sometimes you just have to make the hard decision and employ deadly force. I think the initial decisions to try less lethal force were sound. I think that's what, you know, they had the time and the ability to do that. And having somebody there with lethal force available was also a good tactical decision. But I agree with the sheriff. I think there were multiple times where they probably should have done that earlier. And that's what I get concerned with as a chief, is I have a responsibility to teach my officers about de-escalation, how to de-escalate situations, less lethal force and lower force measures. But I always am just scared to death that my guys are going to take it too far and get hurt or killed themselves, or allow somebody else to get hurt or killed out of fear of being prosecuted because they didn't allow the situation to develop like some person who's never had the internal fortitude to put the badge on will later on say they should have done. It's something we struggle with in our training processes here. So we work on that a lot to try to get the officers to understand that at some point you're just going to have to make a decision. And if lethal force is the move, then it's my job to support that if they've done everything else that they can. It's clearly justified.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. You know, I'm excited to talk about this next one. So I know we got about 5 minutes left. I see Sheriff, you know, Kreider's looking at the clock. So I gotta move on. But hey, this next one, I got a suggestion for Rich and Frank. Hire this cop with a pistol that takes the dude out, the sniper, you know, on the roof, and replace him with the counter sniper dude that the Secret Service was using for that Butler, Pennsylvania thing. So listen to this. So Rumble.com, again, our favorite law enforcement video channel. This is better. Kern County Sheriff's deputies, plural, they shoot man wielding a rifle on top of a roof.
Hey, he's right above us. Back up behind the car. Hey, put your hands up. Kern County Sheriff's Office. He has a gun. Hey, put your damn hands up. He's on top of the building. Right above us.
Right above me?
Yeah. It'll be like top right. He dropped the gun. I can still see movement on top of the roof.
Drop the gun.
Put your hands up where we can see him. I can see one of his hands, right? It's moving. His hands are up.
I barely moved my right arm. He's dropping.
Slowly crawl towards me now. Do not touch the gun and crawl towards the edge of the roof now.
He's on like the right corner of this roof.
On the Sequoia?
Control and current 2. I have the subject, the or visual of the subject. His hands are raised. He says he can't move. Yeah, he's right here.
Just wild story. So Kernville, California. I mean, we're in California, guys. I mean, I'm that's the first flag. I'm already surprised, right? Kern County Sheriff's Office deputies are investigating an early morning deputy-involved shooting in Kernville on Thursday. Deputies responded. It's 3:30 in the morning. It's a welfare check. A 28-year-old Colin Kegley, they're doing the welfare check on. When units get there, the deputy-involved shooting occurs after attempts are made to reach this dude on a cell phone. And Kegley was transferred to the hospital after the shooting. Now, he ended up being arrested under suspicion of assault with a firearm on a peace officer, exhibiting a firearm in the presence of a firearm. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Carrying a loaded firearm in public, carrying a loaded firearm with the intent to commit a felony. It kind of goes on and on. But let me go to my show notes. And this is pretty spectacular. So when you start watching, but you got to go into this thing. So around the 7-minute mark in the video, we see the suspect armed with a rifle. He calls 911 and said he wanted to ambush law enforcement and he wanted to force a deadly confrontation. So then we jump to almost the 8-minute mark. Deputy hears gunshots as the suspect starts shooting at them from the roof. Deputy engages the suspect. Deputy's armed with a handgun. Bad guy on the roof. And it is dark, right? I already said it was like, you know, early at 3:30 in the morning. you can hardly see this dude. Deputy's got a handgun, a pistol, and he shoots at the dude. And it was a thing of beauty. Deputy engages the suspect with a handgun from 8:08 to 8:33. So you've almost got about 30 seconds of shooting, about half a minute. From the deputy to the bad guy, and he hits him. Unbelievable shot. Suspect drops the rifle, and they end up arresting him about 3.5 hours later. But he couldn't even hold the rifle anymore. Amazing shot, amazing story. I don't think it got enough airtime or the deputy got enough credit. Sheriff Mark Ryder.
Well, before I fricassee the officer, I will say it was good shooting, and I did like, you can tell by the sounds, you know, we teach as you increase in distance, you got to slow your rate of fire down to where you can see your sights and see your target. He should have gotten out of the car with a rifle. He would have ended that a lot quicker, but we have to remember it's California. They're probably not allowed to have rifles because those are weapons of war. So he used the tool that was available to him. So I will applaud him for that.
Yeah. And you know, you're 100% right. Another example on why we need to equip these guys with rifles, not in the trunk, in the cockpit, you know, in the front where they have access to them. And it would have been because he's having to give verbal direction to the other guys that are there. Like, hey, he's on the roof. He's to the right. You know, he's trying to tell the other, because it's dark, but he's trying to tell people where the threat's at. He obviously, I guess he had really good eyesight, and other people were having a hard time seeing the shooter. But I would have loved for this guy to have had a rifle out. And I suspect because it's California, you might be right. But I love the stories where guys are equipped with the rifles as they should be. So we've got
whether I'm right or not, it makes for a good story about California.
No, you're right. Well, that's a good point too. We got about a minute and a half left, guys. Anybody else on this story? Any other input? You know, we've had a string of some Good Samaritans coming in, so I can throw this Good Samaritan story in. Would you guys rather do the Good Samaritan that helps the we'll do this one. WRDW.com. Good Samaritan helps a Georgia police officer arrest an armed person. We got two honest citizens. They don't name either one of them, but at least in Atlanta, we've got a citizen that points a dude out to a cop. Cop gets there, tries to grab onto the guy. And the guy produces a gun and they're fighting over it. And this Good Samaritan comes over and he's helping the cop in the scuffle. And they've all got their hands on the bad guy's gun. And it ended up being a BB gun. They didn't know it at the time, but it had a happy ending. But I love the fact that even in Atlanta, Chief Noller, you know, we had a good guy willing to help the cop out.
Yeah, I love these stories because it's easy for us, and especially our patrolmen who are out on the street every day to forget that a lot of people out there support what we do, that care about our officers and are willing to step into the fray and take action to help us go home at night. So I like these kind of stories. And even in a town like Atlanta, people care about the cops there. So
no, excellent. No, I totally agree. Gentlemen, we are at time. Thank you guys so much. What an exciting show this has been. So thank you so much to Sheriff Mark Kreider, Chief Chris Noller, and of course, our Secret Service buddies, former agent Frank Loveridge, and of course, Rich Steripoli. Guys, excellent, excellent content. You should take this opportunity to mention the Wounded Blue that was founded by Lieutenant Randy Sutton from Las Vegas Metro Police Department, and they're helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. If you guys are looking for an organization to support, and especially one that's not going to embarrass you, I highly recommend the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Please consider that. I do want to thank our sponsors again, our title sponsor, Gauls.com, Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor, Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, my medical Care.life, Safeguard Recruiting, and also Two Bells. If you haven't been to our new online store, guys, please go to our online store at leoroundtable.com and check out. You know, I don't have suits on there like what you like what our Secret Service buddies are wearing. I'm gonna get some ties though. They may like that, but check it out. leoroundtable.com.